Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beat and Track podcast. I'm your host. I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. Today's episode, it's Walter Schreifels of Rival Schools, of Quicksand. Yes, I know. I was absolutely blown away when I got the opportunity to speak to Walter. Straight up legend. And as you're about to find out, one of the nicest guys to ever have been on this podcast. An absolute delight. Before we get on with the episode, a few thank yous. Thanks to you, lovely lot, for continuing to support the podcast. Thank you to Scroobius Pip and my bros and sisters at the Distraction Pieces Network. Thank you to 76 for producing this podcast. Also, if this is your first time listening to Off the Beat and Track, then when you get to the end of this chat with Walter, then go check out the back catalogue. Over 300 episodes. Who can you hear me talking to? Loads, obviously, but Foo Fighters, Papa Roach, Suede, Sleaford Mods, Idols, Fatboy Slim, Melanie C of the Spice Girls, if you like your actors, Maxine Peake, Amanda Abington, Joe Hartley, Michael Smiley, Thomas Turgoose, there's stacks. Butch Vig. Really good chat with Butch. Go check that one out. The best thing you can do is just go and have a look, because you'll see all your favourite bands and DJs and producers and actors and comedians. They're all over there. And have a flick through. Find one you like. Press play. Better still, subscribe. Then you won't miss any. Leave us a little message, or just give us a little like, love, or a share on the socials. If you'd like even more, then you can support the podcast on my Patreon. It's 79p a month, and for that you get lots of video episodes. You get access to a back catalogue of 250 radio shows and episodes and all sorts of stuff. So, yeah, and it's 79p a month, and by doing that you help support the podcast. Right, I think we can get on with it. Please enjoy today's episode of Off the Beat and Track podcast with Walter Schreifels. Right, I've got to take a quick break in this podcast because I've got some super exciting news. Off the Beat and Track podcast is proud to go into partnership with the Cacao Bar from Hotel Chocolat. That's right. The Cacao Bar is not a chocolate bar. It's all the best bits of a chocolate bar put into a really exciting new alcoholic range. That's right. Gin, vodka, and a beautiful range of cream liqueurs. So, one of the big bonuses of this partnership is obviously I'm super thrilled to have Hotel Chocolat working with us, but they sent me a great big box of this stuff. And I'm telling you, it's amazing. Go and check it out, www.hotelchocolat.com, or over on the socials at Hotel Chocolat. But yeah, in the coming months, there's going to be opportunities for you to get involved with competitions with us, to win bottles of stuff. There's loads of exciting things coming soon, and I can't be more happy to say that this podcast is in partnership with the Cacao Bar from Hotel Chocolat. All right, let's get back to the podcast. It's Off the Beat and Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin. Okay, we are recording. Walter, how are you doing today?
I'm good, thanks. I'm just chilling. Beautiful day here in New York. It's pretty just sunny and nice and just relaxing.
Oh, wonderful. Well, in the UK, I should point out we're recording this on the 6th of August. All our restrictions have been dropped now, and so we're at a point now where live shows are happening again and nightclubs are reopening and such, and it's quite a surreal time at the moment to kind of find ourselves sort of thrust back into all of that. What's the situation like where you are?
I guess it's sort of kind of, it's been a push and a pull. Like it was, things were kind of optimistic in the last month or two with people getting vaccinated. And now there's the Delta variant, which I think was out in the UK. And now that's kind of the thing here. So it seems like they're trying to pull back a little bit and kind of a little bit waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Sure.
in some regard, you know?
Well, with that in mind, just casting your mind back over the last 15, 16 months, how have you found that personally and creatively?
Well, in my personal experience, you know, obviously like everyone, you know, there's a sort of, you know, there's a blanketing feeling, you know, there's people that are really suffering and not just people that are dying, but, you know, economically and, you know, people that are, you know, being put under all kinds of stresses because of the pandemic, for, you know, all kinds of different reasons and how they're dealing with it. So that you're aware of that suffering, but, you know, so in my own experience though, I was very fortunate to have a place to go in upstate New York, and it was very peaceful and, didn't really need to be around people except to go to the grocery store. So I found it like a really cool time actually, you know, in the sense that life had slowed down. So there was no expectation of having to like, you know, deliver anything, and no one was expecting anything of me. I wasn't expecting anything of them. And, I'm very grateful for that kind of, good fortune in that regard. And, feel like I made the best of that situation in a lot of ways. And, you know, it was quality time with my family, and that was really nice. And I guess creatively, you know, part two of the question was, I took, you know, having finished the Quicksand record right before the lockdown.
Oh, that was finished before lockdown.
We finished it on March 10th, which was my birthday. We finished all the tracking, which was awesome. And then lockdown was, I think, on March 15th. And the shit really hit the fan pretty quickly in the States, where it was like sort of like something happening somewhere else to like, holy shit, this is real.
Yeah.
So I felt again in a good position that I had completed something that, you know, I didn't feel any pressure to like deliver anything.
Yeah.
So, you know, all my creative things were just like kind of more fun. I started like playing drums more, started messing around with synths, started playing bass more. In a creative sense, I really just had fun.
Yeah.
I didn't, you know, no career ambition about it.
Well, let's talk records. For track one, I'm going to ask you all, please, to tell me the song that you regard as having the greatest ever intro.
Yeah. Well, I could think about 40 different songs that have greatest ever level.
You can have a couple of honorable mentions if you want.
Honorable mentions. Song Remains the Same is a good one. We Gotta Know by Cro-Mags is a good one. But I went with, For Whom the Bell Tolls.
Yeah.
Is a good one, which leads me to remember that AC/DC For Those About to Rock is a sick intro. Hell's Bells.
Yeah.
AC/DC probably have probably like six or seven in their canon.
They've featured heavily on this podcast, especially on that question.
Yeah. Cause they just rock it. So hard. They really set up a tune. But I don't know, off the cuff, I'm going to go, because there's such stiff competition, I just thought Raining Blood, Slayer.
Yeah.
It's just so, I think it might have been, you know, I was a bit late to Slayer. I was talking with a friend about Slayer the other day, and like Hell Awaits, like the kids in your school that were into Hell Awaits at that time, and I was the age of them being new.
Yeah.
Like those kids were fucking, were the scary kids in yeah. class. And so I kind of kept, I didn't dive in right away, let's just say. And, but eventually, you know, I got into hardcore, and then I started to circle back to some of this, you know, awesome thrash metal that was coming out. And, you know, Raining Blood might have been the first thing I heard, and just like, it just delivered on every level. And just when it kicks into the gallop, you just feel like, I mean, it's pre Game of Thrones, but you're basically like charging on a horse with a big fucking battle axe, just popping heads off. And
so true.
You know, so it's, and then when it breaks into the guitar break and then the double guitar, dun 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 dun, it's like the fucking most evil shit in the whole world. And you just feel like you're on the side that's winning. It's fucking awesome.
I couldn't have put that any better. You feel like you're on the side that's winning. I love that. In regards to intros, just going to ask you this. How has, from the early days of you writing songs to the way that people would listen and obtain their music then, to the new record and the way that people listen to music now, uh-huh. has the way that people listen to music, and I mean like the where they find it and where they access it from, and these ever rapidly increasing attention, rapidly shortening attention spans, have any of them kind of shifts in technology and stuff like that had any kind of influence on how you approach a song and potentially the intro?
The art of the intro, you're saying. Yeah, I mean, it's a thought. I mean, I kind of try to tune out a lot of that kind of stuff when I'm working on things. But I do think that sometimes, yeah, I mean, I guess you have from your own experience, you start to take on some of the habits of your time. You know what I mean? Like, you want to be grabbed quicker, which maybe was always true, but you know, with you know, the scene that I came up in, maybe people had more patience or something. So yeah, you, by the time you're there, a big intro, here's something that I think, I guess it, maybe this is a bit cynical, but like you hear like an awesome intro, you know, like even Metallica, I can remember hearing like For Whom the Bell Tolls, just being like, okay, this is fucking awesome. But when the vocal comes in, this better, you better fucking deliver.
Yeah.
Cause you just put me through like a minute of this shit. Mm. Don't let me down.
Yeah.
So a lot of the time nowadays, if I hear like a long intro, I'm just bracing myself for a shitty vocalist. You know what I mean? Cause you could be like, this is the fucking best band ever. And then the vocal comes in and then you're like, aha, I get it. You know? So that's just my own cynicism. But when someone comes in, you know, strong, well then obviously you're on track for something classic, and you're basically like inviting the listener into a band that has some sort of depth.
Yeah.
In our time now, I feel like the rhythm is much more about little pokes of attention and less about like, okay, well let's sit down and have a conversation. It's yeah. more about like one-liners. If I were to I don't know if Rodney Dangerfield is known in the UK, but you know, one-liners, you know, like yeah. jabs, and it's less about like, you know, story arcs, you know, not for everybody and in all ways, but I think that's just the language, you know?
Okay. For track two, I'm going to take you back, and I'm going to ask you please to tell me the first song you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you, please.
The first one that I recall was, I mean, I could think of a rush of kind of like early 70s, like, you know, Cat Stevens kind of songs, but I do remember like, Seasons in the Sun or something like that, you know, some kind of sugary stuff from that era. But, I remember as a kid watching, on 4th of July, going to my friend's house, and on the TV was the Yellow Submarine was on TV. And I think I came in right as Nowhere Man came on.
Yeah.
And just how the Beatles are kind of like walking through this scene with this sort of sad, funny character of Nowhere Man. I wouldn't have been able to like understand the feeling that was hitting me at the time, but you know, maybe it was like an emo moment or something, you know, where it's just like, I am that little, there's part of me in that,
yeah,
that Nowhere Man character, even though fuck, I was probably like 7 years old or 8 years old. Nothing had happened to me, but I already related to this sort of, this character that was in some sort of turmoil that I couldn't understand except in a childlike way. And, you know, that the Beatles were like basically cheering him up, you know, with music, and their colorfulness was bringing him something that he needed from others. And I think that, you know, as I'm describing it to you, obviously it connected with me on an emotional level.
So where was home then? Where was growing up?
At that point, my parents were in were at college in Penn State University. My parents were educated there, and so I lived in a university environment for some years. But before that, I lived in Rockaway Beach, and after my parents graduated, we moved back to Rockaway Beach, which is a peninsula off of Queens, which is a borough of New York City, and it's kind of like the outer edges of New York. So you can see the Manhattan skyline, but it's from a distance. And I grew up next to the beach, which was you know, I'm very grateful, and it was awesome.
Okay, was it a musical house?
Excuse me.
Was it a musical house? Was there always music at home?
I am aware, you know, especially like when my parents were going to college, you know, it's like hippies, parties, like everyone smoking pot and me not knowing what that was, but everyone was in a good mood and you're the kid and everyone likes you, with, you know, Crosby, Stills and Nash playing, you know, it's just of that era.
Yeah.
My dad was into the Beach Boys because he was a surfer, and, so I kind of like felt a kinship to the Beach Boys. Like, he had like Endless Summer laying around, so I used to listen to that all the time. And my mom was more of like a folky, which I think is kind of typical of her age. So Donovan records were around. Joan Baez. I didn't really dig too deep into her, but Bob Dylan, we had a copy of Blonde on Blonde when I was little that I would listen to. And, you know, Fleetwood Mac, stuff of the 70s, but yeah. I wouldn't let my parents were like, oh man, I can't wait to get this new record. No, they were, you know, trying to like pay for shit and make sure
it didn't work out, you know. Okay. Well, starting in the formative years, for track 3, I'm going to ask you, please, to tell me the song that reminds you of your time at school, please.
I went to school, in New York, and it was such a cool time in the 80s. I mean, I guess any time that you're at, you know, young in that way is an exciting time to you because you're experiencing things in a new way and you're, you know, kind of creating your identity through all these, you know, I found it through music. But in New York, it was really awesome because not only was like the kind of like hardcore punk rock scene happening that I ultimately discovered, but like hip hop was like, obviously now it's the most popular music in the world. But when I was a kid, it only really existed in New York City. Like we owned it. You know, we had Run DMC. We had, you know, LL Cool J. We had, and before that, you know, we had Houdini. We had Curtis Blow. We had African Bambaataa. And even as almost into the 90s, there wasn't really a hip hop group outside of New York until like NWA came out.
Yeah.
That really could challenge anybody from New York. It was just like, we had the formula and everyone else was just trying to imitate it. So, you know, breakdancing, graffiti, hip hop was like permeated everything in our world in high school. And I really, you know, there was so much of that that I really loved, and it was just kind of would soak into you. But I guess when I think of high school, I think of fun. And I really loved De La Soul, 3 Feet High and Rising album, where it was just so eclectic and had this kind of, it kind of jumped the paradigm from like this kind of b-boy approach to hip hop to something, yeah, more colorful and open. And I guess almost Beatlesque now that we're kind of referring back to the earlier thing that kind of hit me. And Me, Myself, and I is the perfect, was the perfect, I think it probably came out in the summer. It makes me think of the summer, even though I'm talking about school, but you know, it was something that everyone could love and brought people together. And, you know, my early like nightclub high school sneaking out kind of thing, like that was a big hit. Yeah, I think, you know, it was an amazing record and you know, definitely feels, I mean, you can't listen to it now because I think all the samples haven't been cleared.
Oh,
but,
man, it's true. You can't find it on Spotify.
Yeah, which is really sad because it's just like you don't have access to it unless you have a turntable. But yeah, I love that song. I don't know. That's the first thing that popped in my head.
It's, I mean, I'm 48 and that record dropped when I was maybe 15 and it just, I mean, like, again, I'm very jealous that you was exposed to all of that hip hop in New York, because as somebody that lives on the outskirts of London, we was just clambering for any snippet of what was coming out of New York in the UK. You know, it was all on, you know, getting what we could on imports. And when De La happened, there was like a second summer of love happening with rave culture in the UK, and you know, acid house was happening, and it was just this second summer of love, and it seems really weird that in there was this acid house music and there was all sorts of kind of, I guess, of house music happening as well, yet De La featured in that scene. It just, because it was, we called it Daisy Age over here, like their hip hop, because we'd get like Jungle Brothers and Tribe Called Quest and Moni Love and all of that would be sort of thrown in there with it. And I just think that that record didn't sound like any kind of hip hop I'd ever heard. It was completely different. It wasn't about how much money you've got, how tough you are. It was three kind of crazy hippies. I mean, could you draw the kind of parallels to that Crosby, Stills and stuff and the stuff you were sort of listening to growing up? It was like almost like a rework of that scene.
That's an interesting way to put it. I haven't really thought about it in those terms. But yeah, I mean, they just totally jumped the whole paradigm of – and I think at the time, I think it really just flipped people's – minds out, you know, and obviously like Tribe Called Quest, I think like kind of touched on some of the same, were able to inhabit some of the same zone. But that record just like, you know, it just like switched everything up and like changed everything for a number of years. And also just the production on it is just like, no one had ever heard anything like that. I mean, I think like the Bomb Squad, like Public Enemy and Prince Paul at that time, were incredibly just creative and just creating these soundscapes that you just, you know, I think in the UK, yeah, you had acid house. And I think there was a more dance oriented, music culture, than in the United States maybe. But I mean, it's still just sounds incredible today. It sounds, even if you understand how to do it, it sounds otherworldly. So I think of that. I mean, I could name other songs, but I think of my school era. I don't know. I think that encapsulates the good vibe of it.
Yeah.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Listen up. I've only got another new sponsor. Eggfried. It's this super cool clothing label. And if you're into sort of skating and street art and gigging and kind of like really cool art and throwing a little bit of Asian culture and the designer's kind of weird sense of humour in the mix, then you're pretty much there with the wonderful world that is eggfried.com. Now, they do these amazing punchy kind of graphic tees, hoodies and sweatshirts, beautiful art prints, as well as this. They have a denim range, all handmade in-house, all supporting the slow fashion movement. Not only that, they've given you a discount code, 10% off when you head over to eggfried.com. Just use the code EGGSALAD, E-G-G-S-A-L-A-D, save 10%. Go and get lost in the world of Eggfried. Also, they've got a new kids range, and it's called Small Fried, and it's super cool, super cute. And again, it's all over there in this wonderful world. Go and get involved at eggfried.com. So school was good, yeah?
It was sort of, I mean, it wasn't bad. Like, I wasn't bullied. I didn't, you know, I didn't love it or care about it. I had some friends, you know, but especially in high school, my focus was, I was into this like hardcore punk thing going on at CBGB. So I felt more, my friend group was more in through music than the proximity to the kids that I just happened to be going to school with. Although, you know, I had friends, you know, and as I.
Did you know what you wanted to be when you was at school?
I kind of had some sort of expectation, that I would go to college, you know, because my parents had gone to college, and I figured the system was kind of like you go to college and then you get a job. Someone gives you a job. So maybe I thought I could be a teacher or something like that. Something that would be like have summers off and, you know, I could study something I was interested in, like history or English or something. Not that I was so interested in English, but, you know, some sort of thing like that. Where there's some sort of creative element, but you know, and I went to college for maybe, a year and a half. And then just music sort of took over and became more of a professional where I was paying my rent with it. And, so I ditched those dreams, but I had it in the back of my head. I would go back to college. And then after a while, I was like, okay, you're a musician. So that's what you're doing.
Was you a confident kid?
Confident. I guess, yeah, you know, in some ways I know my strengths and I can enough to like, you know, write songs, put myself in front of an audience, you know, talk on a podcast. I think those kind of things are, I have a certain confidence, innate. And then in other realms, I'm useless, you know what I mean? Yeah. Or that's where my work is, you know? So, you know, some people are, I guess, you know, lean one side of the scale or the other. I guess I'm probably on the more confident side, but, but I don't think we're, you know, there's things that I'm just like, holy shit, I'm out of my depth.
Yeah. Track 4, the first song you remember buying from a record store, please.
I got to go back to the Beatles. I don't know. I think my Aunt Nellie gave me the money for this, but, I went to a record store. I was so little and just, I bought a Beatles 7-inch cause that's how much money I had. And I bought, the Hey Jude, Revolution 7-inch, on Capitol Records. I can remember the red, center with big Capitol, 70s Capitol, logo on it. And, yeah, it was awesome. I mean, I knew the song, Hey Jude, There was something about that song that felt, I mean, whatever, it's in our DNA, that song. I felt like it was speaking to me, and, you know, and Revolution had this like edge to it that appealed to. So I guess, you know, if I'm going backwards and thinking about it in this time, like I am living, my musical loves are within that 7-inch, you know, the edginess of Revolution and the sort of warmth and intimacy and community of Hey Jude. Cause it is a song where it's personal, but it evolves to the whole,
absolutely,
you know, we are the worldness about it.
As you got older, how important did record stores become as a place for you?
Man, I miss them so much. I mean, I will go into record stores still to just be in that environment. But even when things kind of got corporate, you know, there was these like big Tower Records or HMV or these kind of things. Like, I even loved that, you know what I mean? Where you could just like inhabit where all the records of the week were coming out, the people that were buying them, and, you know, flip through the magazines and engage tactily. Is it with tactile, you know, like you could touch it.
Yeah.
Tangible. Yeah. In that, and be in it, and kill time, you know, or go to a record store, get in a conversation with the person who works there about music, and, you know, share and learn and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I don't want to sound like overly nostalgic or grampsy about it, but like that was awesome. You know what I mean? So now, of course, like there's Spotify and there's all these other things that have a certain speed and coolness. You know, I'm absorbing a lot of music and I'm learning, you know, my algorithm is feeding me some really cool shit. Like, you know, respect to that algorithm, but you know, some of our humanity is lost. You know, you can't put that back in the bottle, sadly.
It's the album artwork. It's a thing that I miss. And it's like when you was talking about growing up and, you know, yeah, Blonde on Blonde and things like that, when you would put that record on, I presume you'd then sit there and look at the sleeve and read the sleeve notes and like, and I would nerd out over that shit as a kid and like, And as much as like I don't want to be Grandad Stu and start, you know, kind of going, you know, back in my day, and, you know, there's so many positives to being able to stream music and within, you know, 2 seconds have anything you want, you know, to listen to.
Sure.
That's incredible. But I do think that the album artwork is one of the things that I think has suffered as technology's advanced, and I think that's the one thing that I do miss.
I agree with you. I mean, looking at Blonde and Blonde and just thinking like, this is Bob Dylan. Like, his hair is really cool. Like, who else looks like that? Like, reading the whatever there is to be read about, you know, it within it. And it's a gatefold. That experience, that sort of like tactile experience and intimacy with this sort of investment. And I think there's something very primal about like having a bookshelf. Yeah. Having a record collection, you know, that they are objects, you know what I mean? It kind of goes back to caveman days when like cavemen would be like, bring home certain rocks and be like, this is my rock collection. You know what I mean? If you want to borrow the rock, make sure you put the fucking rock back.
Damn right.
You know what I mean? Because that's a fucking cool rock to me. And I really care about that one. So yes, you can borrow it. You know, there's something very primal about that, that is lost in our, you know, minimally designed, you know, minimally furnished television on the wall mode of living, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Track 5, the song that soundtracked your years clubbing.
My clubbing life, my first phase of clubbing when it was really like clubbing, like New York was amazing in the, I kind of caught the end of a certain era of New York prior to who's world known, Rudolph Giuliani, who really kind of started the decline of fun in New York. But there used to be like just these huge warehouses where you could even go as a teen underage and rub elbows with, like, you know, like Club Mars, for example. You'd go there and it would be like Eric B and Rakim would be there. Chuck D would be there. You know, Scoop and Scrap and Big Daddy Kane would be there. You know, Love and Rockets are in town. They're there. You know what I mean? You're just like hanging out with all these people in a warehouse space that if you see movies from the 80s or something, like, you know, they're trying to imitate that sort of like freedom, you know, yeah. where it's, and then on the other hand, there was, you know, the beginning of these sort of like velvet rope, not the beginning of, I guess that would have existed, but, you know, a velvet rope aspect, you know, yeah. Where you're paying for drinks and stuff like that. But I think a really, besides the hip hop, there was one of the bands that really just cut through for me was New Order, because they would get played in the clubs, along with, you know, Public Enemy, and then it would be New Order. Yeah. And Bizarre Love Triangle was like a huge hit. I mean, Blue Monday was like, obviously like the killer track, yeah. But there's something about Bizarre Love Triangle that's just like hopeful and romantic and a dreamscape that, I wasn't into E or anything like that, but it gave you that feeling of just like, yeah, I guess it's a return to this sort of like almost hippie thing that I keep coming back to, you know, like sunshine and rainbows and the possibilities of life and love. And that song just fucking rips, still hits me.
So good, man. And it's got to be the full 12-inch version as well. Got to rinse that intro. And it's just when that chorus drops, it's joyous. I mean, that record is pure pop. It's just perfect pop music, you know, and... Yeah. Oh, it delivers. It really does.
And where it's coming from too. Like, I mean, I was into Joy Division prior to that. I mean, and I followed New Order. There was a really great radio station in, out in Long Island that would play things from the UK. And, you know, wasn't on any popular radio station in New York, but it was this station called WLAR, and they would play like every UK single. So I had followed New Order from, you know, through these different evolutions to where they're like a full-fledged, like legit, like they just, again, just jumped forward in the line. Like, so from where they had been only like a few years before, not in, only in terms of quality, but just like showing the potential of dance music, of reaching a popular audience, but in a way that's like not pandering and is full of like authentic emotion and joy. It's amazing.
I totally agree. I think, you know, coming out of Joy Division and then going to New York and experiencing them kind of electro clubs and stuff like that, and then I guess meeting Arthur Baker, and then the rest is history. I think, you know, once he added his little bits of magic to so many of them songs, oh, wonderful. What a band.
Yeah, what a combination, you know, of just like, you know, when you boil it down, they're just like these blokes in a way. Yeah. You know what I mean? And I remember seeing them. I saw them at a festival in Germany, Hurricane Festival. And I was playing, and I was able to get like on side stage watching them play. And just like their whole manner, you just know these dudes are just blokes from fucking Manchester. Yet they created this music that is just like transcendent. And it's just something else. I don't know if people can have it in them to appreciate how awesome they are, although of course people love them.
Yeah. I saw them do one of their first shows back in a long time, probably 18 years ago at Finsbury Park, a big outdoor gig. And at the time my wife was pregnant, and I said, look, we've got to go. I said, like, this will be incredible. And it was the day that Dee Dee Ramone had died, and and Hookie had sprayed Dee Dee on his amp. And I remember they come out and they started with Bizarre Love Triangle. And I was just watching it, and you're so right, it is just a load of blokes from Manchester. And like, my wife was like, why is he doing that funny dance? And I was like, no, that's what Bernard does. That's him dancing. That's just this weird little thing where he's skipping around the stage. It makes no sense, but it doesn't matter because it's New Order. It's what they do. Like, and they do just look like they've come out of some like working men's club, and like, you know, put on a nice t-shirt and it's like, oh, go on, get out there and do your thing. And like, oh, yeah, go on, you can take your wife with you as well. She's going to be on keyboards. And it, like, oh, yeah, that's his wife. And like, and she, it's just bizarre. Like, no pun intended there, but it is. And,
yeah.
But it's just incredible. And, you know, you scratch the surface of any of it. And, you know, that whole scene and what come from Manchester, you know, at that point. And then again, then resurfaced at, you know, in that, you know, time of Acid House and the Hacienda and Factory Records and Tony Wilson. You know, it's the stuff of fairy tales over here. I don't know how epic it is in the States, but yeah, like that whole story of what happened with that label and that club, and oh, it's just incredible.
Yeah, it's just like it kind of, those are the kind of things. It's just like, life is cool. Like, some things will come together that are fucking amazing.
Yeah.
And how they contextualized everything they did in this kind of high art context.
Oh, so good.
Is makes the fact that this sort of bloke working man truth to it, rooting even fucking better. Because to me, it's like, sometimes, and maybe this is a class thing, but like sometimes, you know, like a working man or someone from a lower working class background, like, isn't going to be handed culture. You know, you're going to learn culture, like, you know, those things are not going to be easily accessible to them. So like, to come from that sort of background and yet create something that is just like high art.
Yeah.
I don't know. I fucking love that, because yeah, it's like hitting all the, it's checking all the boxes for everyone. And it's coming from that juxtaposition, you know. I mean, you know, if something's good, it's good. It doesn't matter the class, but there's something that I love about that it's so like starkly designed, so simple and clean, and yet so colorful and so full of life.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Track 6, gonna take you home. Favorite song from an artist from your hometown?
I mean, I definitely could whip through a bunch of Ramon songs, because I think they're so iconic. There's loads of hip hop songs that I would could go for. There's hardcore songs that I think are really great, but I guess, you know, one of my first, you know, albums or artists that I really like fell in love with was Blondie.
I think we all did, mate. We all did.
Yeah. I mean, anyone close to our age, I mean, she just was the whole damn package. Yeah. Like there was nothing more. It was quite simple. Like, Deborah Harry was everything. And
was there a cooler person on the planet at that point than Debbie Harry?
I don't know who it is. You know, maybe definitely not on the female side of the planet. Not in my estimation. There was some like other cool people, you know, running around Studio 54.
Yeah.
But to my young my world, no. And if you look back, like, there's a photograph of Debbie with God, she's just so beautiful and awesome, and but there's a photograph of her with David Bowie, and it's a really cool photograph because it shows a side of her that she's like actually stoked to be taking a picture with David Bowie. Like,
yeah.
David Bowie is in the world of people that she could be girlish around.
Yeah.
And it's so charming because she's like so goddamn cool, but so down to earth. It's sort of like that perfect combination. It's maybe like a male fantasy of like the girl that can like hang, but is also super hot.
Yeah.
And can be your friend. You know, and that's the image that she came, especially coming with this awesome band that came along with her.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That to me, you know, I'm looking at the cover of Parallel Lines, for example.
Definitely.
And seeing all these, you know, kind of cool looking boys and you know, all dressed kind of cool and uniformly, but with little details differently.
Yeah.
And just the power of the music and the songs, you know, you knew that that this was not just, you know, say an artist like Pat Benatar, who's obviously, I got a lot of respect for her. She, or even Joan Jett, you know, where they have like a backing group.
Yeah.
Blondie had more than that.
Yeah.
So I guess the song that I'm thinking of that wasn't really my first introduction to Blondie, which would have been Parallel Lines. But going back a little bit, I think it's on, I can't remember what album it's on, but I think it's on Plastic Letters. I'm Always Touched by Your Presence, Dear.
What a record.
It's just, I mean, I think they were huge in the UK by this time already, but in the United States, it didn't happen until Heart of Glass, which is strange, but America's like, just like that. But that song has this sort of classic 70s-ness about it. That's almost like, there's almost like a Maggie May-ness about it. But with a punk, like an uptick in the speed, and there's something like just so perfect about it. And just her voice and like how it's this, the sentiment of it. It's just doesn't get cooler than that. Like, I think, you know, I could pick other like later songs, but I guess maybe because like it wasn't the first Blondie song that I heard when they were like most popular, and that it wasn't a hit, that like I went back into it maybe a little bit late in my teenage year and just dug into these earlier records, and I was like, this is just fucking cool. This is like the girlfriend that you want.
Yeah.
Like a girl that is like this.
Yeah.
You know, and not just because she's pretty, but because she's cool.
Yeah.
So I don't know. That's a lot to be said about Blondie, and they have probably like at least 8 other songs like on that level, but that's a special one.
It is. I mean, the greatest hits of Blondie, I mean, if you stick that on, there is no fat on that record. That is as lean and as perfect a guitar pop record you're ever going to hear. Like, just a wonderful, wonderful band. I touched on something earlier, on confidence, and aside from confidence, or you've had an incredible career that spanned, you know, a fair few years now. And with that in mind, confidence aside, would you say that you're driven?
Yeah, to a certain degree. I kind of have this sort of compulsion where, which has manifested itself through music, where like I'll just hear something in my head, or like I'll envision a scenario, like, you know, playing with certain people and what would be a good sound and how that would affect people. And then I'll just kind of have a hard time thinking about anything else until I like record it.
Yeah.
And then I can pay attention to whatever it is that I'm doing. And so that just keeps coming to me. And I have like thousands of these things. So it's sort of like, you know, hearing voices in a way. And the next step of that is to take those little ideas and take them to a finish line, to where like that is becomes a song and has like sort of, you know, structure to it. And then it comes out, and then, you know, people can like, it exists outside of me. And that's really what I want. I want like whatever it is in me is to get out of me.
Yeah.
And then the moment that it's out of me and I can listen back to it and I've done all the work that I can do on it, like I might have some thought about thinking, wow, this is a really good one. Or like, shit, I wish this had been a little bit better there, or something like that. But no matter what it is, I'm quickly thinking about what's the next thing to get it. So it's never satisfying.
Yeah.
So in a way that's a drive, you know what I mean? That I'm never content. Although like, of course I'm like proud of like things that I've done, and I'm like grateful that it worked out the way that it did, and which allows me to keep going through this kind of purge. Because I could have some other profession and still have, you know, have to fit this in, this fucking craziness, and, you know, in my spare time much more. But I've been very fortunate that it's worked out in that regard. So, you know, I'm driven in the fact that like, I want to, if I artistically want something, like I'll take steps to make that happen. And sometimes they're circuitous And but usually when it starts to get in the home stretch, I'm pretty determined.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Yeah. Last track. A song that many may not know that you would like them to hear, please.
Cool Keith is such an interesting... Yeah, it's a song that I think everyone should hear. It'll just kind of bring a little sunshine to your life. Is Kool Keith Living Astro. I think Kool Keith is so interesting, and he's just incredible. His flow is just amazing, and sort of like just off kilter and not like playing the typical roles. He's kind of in his own lane, and I find him very interesting and creative. And Living Astro, if ever I'm feeling like, man, life is so serious and, you know, this is like really grim, or it's kind of like almost like, you know, Monty Python, always look on the bright side of life. Like, this fucker will have you not whistling, but, you know, metaphorically, like Living Astro, like you want to be living like Kool Keith is living. Yeah. He's actually living that life. Like, he's not portraying it. He's doing it.
Yeah.
And that's inspiring. That's just aspirational and fucking cool. It makes me feel good to know that people are living that life and enjoying it.
Well, people can listen to it because we put together a Spotify playlist to accompany the podcast with all the songs that you've chosen today, Walter. As we find ourselves entering into the sort of the second half of 2021, and hopefully going with a little bit more positivity and to see some more connection and to see something that perhaps we was more used to, you know, 2 years ago returning. With all of that in mind, what are you looking forward to from the rest of this year personally, and what's going to be happening professionally?
Well, Quicksand, with this new record, we have a tour booked in the United States in the fall, coming up not too far away. So I'm really have my fingers crossed that, that the current situation holds and where we're able to have gigs again. So I'm cautiously optimistic and hopeful for that to come through. And in which case, not only will I be excited to play and travel around with my friends, but, you know, see America again and like just kind of travel and look out the window and see the country. That's going to be really exciting for me. So I am looking forward to that. And, you know, as things progress, like I am kind of feeling like with this album out, of course, like referring back to what I was talking about before, I'm kind of itchy to like create some new stuff to set up for 2022, which is, you know, practically around the corner from us, and to write those chapters. So I'm going to be taking some time to do that. And so stuff like that.
And so if people want to kind of keep up to speed with everything that you're up to, where's the best place for people to do that?
I guess my Instagram is kind of like where I'm most actively, you know, kind of sharing like what I'm up to.
Yeah.
And I kind of post semi often.
Okay. So if it's all right with you, when we put this episode out, we'll tag you in it. So if people aren't following you, then they can do so a lot easier.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Wonderful. Walter, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk records with you. Thank you so much.
Same, Stu. Thanks for inviting me, and it was a lot of fun.
Wonderful. Thanks so much, mate. There you go. I told you Walter was amazing. What a lovely dude. We carried on having a big old chat afterwards. That's a good sign. I love it when that happens. That, you know, generally means that the guest is very comfortable and happy to chat, and vice versa. He was delightful. And I hope that came across. I'm sure it did. Yeah, let us know what you thought of the episode. Drop us a message. I'm on all the social media platforms. Go check out the Patreon if you want to support the podcast. If you can give us a like, love, share, or a retweet on the socials, really appreciate that. And better still, subscribe. So, yeah, that's me done. You can find out about everything you need to know about this podcast at offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. Oh, and lastly, big thanks to Em. Em's been an absolute delight. She's been responsible for guests like Walter, and she's introduced me to you know, speak to people like Chuck D. She organised Chuck D, which was one of the most... It was a big episode for me, that one. And obviously, you've just heard us talk about our mutual love of hip-hop. And so, yeah, so big thanks to Em. Yeah, I'm done. I'll see you next time. Be excellent to each other. Much love. Bye-bye. It's Off the Beat and Track Podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. Keep me, Stu, with him.